Want more information about This Week with Ann Carrick and Vincent Caprio? Visit AnnCarrick.com for details.
Welcome back to This Week with Ann Carrick and Vincent Caprio. I'm Ann Carrick, and Vincent Caprio is on the phone with us. Vincent?
Yes.
You're still there. That's always good. And we're going to move on to our real topic for the evening, which is manufacturing in the United States. It's been on the decline for years, but it's not just because of some of the things you hear about, like outsourcing. And Vincent, do you want to say a little bit more about that and go ahead and introduce our first guest?
Yes. So yesterday, 50 years ago, Senator Kennedy became President Kennedy. And on that day, 50 years ago, the United States was the number one nation in manufacturing. We were 25% of GDP. Now we're number 20th. Number 20 in the world, and we're only at 11% of GDP.
Who's that, number one?
Number one is China.
That's what I thought. But
of GDP.
Yeah. Which now, is amazing. How did China... Well never mind. We're going to answer that. Go ahead.
About, Ed, why do you think the last 30 years we've had this decline?
Well, first let's say it's Ed Udell from Fabricators and Manufacturers Association. Ed, thanks for being here with us.
My pleasure. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And, okay, Vince, go ahead.
So right out of the box, Vince, an easy question.
Go ahead.
It's a complicated issue, but if you look at manufacturing and you go back to post-World War II, we are still producing essentially the same amount of output that we were producing post-World War II, but we're just doing it with 13 million people instead of about 35 million people.
And it's not because we've outsourced everything.
Well, there's a lot of issues, and certainly technology is one of the big issues is why we are able to produce so much more now with so much fewer people. That's played a key role in it. Outsourcing has played a key role in it. The changing service economy of the United States has grown at the same time as our manufacturing output has basically become stable.
Now, Ed, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Michigan. My father was a tool and die maker at General Motors. He was a member of the United Auto Workers, so I have a great affinity for manufacturing and the auto industry in particular.
Are there certain sectors of manufacturing that have been harder hit or that we've completely lost versus, in other words, some is outsourcing, some is technology where maybe it's robotics, so it's, equipment and technology making something that people used to stand there and put together themselves. But are there certain areas that are just completely gone or that have been hit the hardest?
Well, if you look at electronics manufacturing in the United States, display technology, that's all gone offshore to Asia. The stamping industry in the United States has been really devastated over the last 20 years.
So could you explain quickly what stamping is?
Yeah, I was going to say, tell people what stamping is.
So the metal stamping industry where we use big stamping presses to stamp out parts or pieces, metal pieces that go into a larger assembly. The high-volume stamping industry has moved offshore because of labor cost advantages in Asia. What's still onshore, and not as much, is the high-value, low-run product manufacturing. And what we're seeing today, as it relates to the subject of offshoring, we're starting to see some of that come back and move back to the United States because of logistics issues with quality issues of manufacturing offshore. Now, if you have a quality issue and you have to call your manufacturer in China and they say, yep, we can fix it for you, we can turn it around for you, that'll be 6 weeks before we can get it back to you. What we're seeing today is those manufacturers who can meet short lead times are the guys who are going to win the battle and win the business.
That's a critical
issue in terms of just-in-time inventory.
Right.
Machine tools are a key part of why we're able to compete on a global basis because we're using automation to be most effective and most efficient in our manufacturing process.
Can you give us some examples? High volume, low run, are those things also more likely to be perhaps slightly customized for whatever the person is ordering, or are they just high volume, low run, and what are some examples that everybody would recognize right away?
Like a high volume piece would be anything over 10,000 pieces. We could argue about that, but I'm going to say anything over 10,000 pieces.
We'll go with your number, yeah.
So if you're making air filters, and you got to stamp out a certain a piece of metal that goes inside it, an oil filter for your car. That would be an example of a product that's probably offshore, produced in China or Mexico, and then shipped back to the States for use.
So the things that are still here in the U.S., what are some of the ones that people would know that are predominantly, if there are there some that are predominantly still made in the U.S.?
Well, certainly there's a lot of defense spending that's done here in the States, defense manufacturing with Humvee vehicles and tanks and things like that.
That makes me feel good,
still,
by the way.
There is some strong shipbuilding in Alabama and different parts of the country. You know, those are just a couple. You know, we still build a lot of automobiles here, despite what you might think.
In our best year, how many automobiles did we build? And after the financial crisis, how many was it?
We were close to 17 million on an annual basis, and now we're creeping up around 11 million, 11 mm-hmm. to 12 million.
Okay. And a lot of people don't realize that cars that they think of possibly as foreign are actually made here.
Well, yes, and you know, that's a great point, because manufacturing is a complicated issue. We as Americans love to export products, and the other side of that is we also import a lot of stuff, and in a fair, you know, if you're in free trade, it's going to go both ways, and we love it when BMW moves to the States and builds a factory in South Carolina or Alabama, but, you know, we want it. That's part of being in a free market economy. You have to accept that that's going to happen. Now, you know, there's really three reasons why you would might offshore, not to take us too far afield, but as it relates to manufacturing. But the first one is you want to get close to the market, and that's why BMW, as an example, is here manufacturing in the United States, and there's lots of other small machine tool companies who have done the same thing. And that's why we're in China. If you think of Buick, you know, 4 billion Chinese people, can't be wrong. Everybody wants a Buick.
Well, I was going to say that years ago, I lived in France for 5 months.
Oh,
and
wow.
I know. Look, that's a whole nother show. But
you're going to have to tell Carl Rove that.
But the thing I found interesting is, if you don't stop and think about it, you get the impression from a lot of people here that U.S.-made cars are not as good as foreign-made cars. That's sort of what a lot of people will say. So when you go to another country, you don't think about it, but your expectation is, why would there be any U.S.-made cars there? Everybody thinks they're lesser quality. Why would they bother shipping them all the way over to Europe? And sure enough, there were Fords, and Ford was the one I happened to see the most of for some reason in Paris. I don't know why. And this was many years ago. But still, it sort of caught my eye. I thought, well, that's interesting. I really didn't expect to see U.S. manufacturers' cars driving around the streets in Europe. I just assumed they would all be European cars when they had so many to choose from right there in Europe. Why would they have U.S. cars there? And, of course, they do.
And part of that is Ford has gone to Europe, just like all the other major big three U.S. manufacturers, and they're building cars over there. What you might not know is General Motors had several different brands on which they built cars under, such as Saab, Vauxhall, and brands like that, that were, the perception is it's a European car, but it's really owned by General Motors back in the United States.
And now, of course, Ford owns people like Jaguar and things that you don't think of as being U.S. cars.
Correct.
They own some of those brands. And I just picked on Ford. I didn't mean to, but happened
so
to come
you're out. The son of an auto worker, and you're Mr. Michigan. And what's interesting, I've lived in the Northeast my whole life, and I never knew anybody that worked in a factory, because we live in a service economy sector over here. So do you think that school systems provide an accurate career path for men and women to go into the manufacturing sector?
Absolutely not. The vocational training is really not available any longer. And why is that? A couple of different reasons is it's too expensive for schools to have metal shop, wood shop. The liabilities are very high, so schools wanted to get out of business of providing that educational track. The other piece of it is, you know, probably going back 30 years more so than ever, is there really was a move towards college prep in public school systems. And, you know, we want everybody to be a doctor and lawyer, which isn't necessarily a good thing for us as an economy. And what you come to learn quickly when you're around people who are in manufacturing is there's a tremendous amount of bright, smart, great people that are so innovative and clever, and we as a country need more of those people to create products and develop manufacturing
systems. People
system.
That actually work with their hands.
Correct.
Instead of speaking with their hands like me.
Right. And, you know, Connecticut has a very strong history in manufacturing, and we actually do still have a good bit of manufacturing in certain sections of the state. Like New Haven still has some manufacturing. And we also have a vocational school system, vocational high schools, where students can choose to go to vocational high schools if they want to go into a trade. So we actually have some things in place here, but Vincent is right that the overwhelming majority of people are steered towards business service because that was the perception, that's where all the money is, and if you're bright, that's where you should go. And yet, you're right, Ed. I've met many people who are in a manufacturing trade type business who are really bright and come up with these great designs and create, you know, designs for products to be manufactured. And if we don't have those people, then we're going to have a problem.
Correct. Right. You know, it's been estimated that if we're left with about 10% of our capacity to build defense infrastructure in the U.S. if, God forbid, a war would break out. And now, a lot of that technology has been offshored. What I believe truly what needs to happen is, as we think about manufacturing, is someone has to step up and come up with a national manufacturing strategy for the United States and overlay that it fits hand in glove with our tax code policy and different things like that. It can't stand on its own, but it needs to be part of a bigger overall strategy.
As a matter of fact, some public policy wonks have called for a Department of Manufacturing and having a cabinet-level officer as the head of the Department of Manufacturing.
After I hang up with you guys, my phone would be available. I'd take that call.
Okay.
you're throwing
Obama?
Your...
But you're going to wait till 2012.
No, not necessary.
You're ready to start now?
Sure.
Okay. You know, you brought up a good point that I've heard people who have done work for companies that do Department of Defense contracts. I know that sounds like a very convoluted thing. But are we actually able to make what we need to defend ourselves as a country from a Department of Defense standpoint? Or have we lost so many skilled people that we couldn't do it right now if we needed to?
Right now there's a couple of naval contracts up for bid. Marionette Marine, I believe, is one company in Wisconsin that has been talked about as one of the potential builders of the naval contract. If they get the job, they can do the work.
Okay.
Now, Ed, how many welding openings are there in the United States?
It's been estimated that by the end of the decade, there'll be openings for 100,000 welders.
And how many welders do we have who know how to do this job?
What's happened with manufacturing is that most people in manufacturing are in their mid-50s.
So they're retiring.
So we're coming to the end of their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not done a good job of finding the people who can replace those folks who have the skill, the need, the want, the desire, and the realization that there are great careers in that field as it relates to welding or metal fabrication or metal forming, just to name a few. I mean, in full disclosure, the Fabricators and Manufacturers Association is focused on championing the cause of metal fabrication and metal forming throughout the United States.
So that's just one piece of manufacturing. You probably have a similar situation going on in other areas that are not metal fabrication and welding, correct?
Sure, yeah. Of course.
And are those... the future of manufacturing might be green manufacturing. What's your involvement with that?
This year, the Fabricators and Manufacturers Association launched a publication called Green Manufacturer. And why did we do that? Today, as an example, the New York Times reported that energy demand worldwide is going to grow by a third over the next 25 years. We believe that industrial users of energy, which makes up about 40% of all the energy used in the United States, represent a great opportunity to create energy-efficient, run manufacturing plants, which would help U.S. manufacturers and manufacturers of any kind and in any place be more competitive on a global marketplace. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit available to manufacturers. They just don't know where to find the information or how to move forward towards creating sustainable manufacturing processes, green products, green applications, and we're going to be the information tool that provides that opportunity.
And it really could be the leader for even the population, because if manufacturing can switch over to greener products and also greener processes, if they can do it, then first of all, it's much bigger savings for the environment.
Right.
And what a great example. If manufacturing can do it, then individuals can see their way to how to do that much more easily, I would think.
Absolutely. There are major companies, Schneider Electric, which is based in Rhode Island, and companies like Siemens. They are making billion-dollar infrastructure investments right now to develop portfolios of green infrastructure products. These companies are leading companies, smart people. They see the future, and they believe that this is an area that they can grow their companies, but they can save manufacturers a lot of money and help them become more competitive on a global platform.
So what do we really need to do before we have to take a break, Ed? What, you know, your opinion, we're putting you up as the expert. What would be the thing that would really help us move forward in not only green initiatives, but in getting the right message about manufacturing out there and having people trained for the jobs that are going to be available in 5 to 10 years, available and not filled?
Well, let's think about this. According to Bank of America Merrill Lynch Global Research, they estimate that from the S&P 500 companies, there's $1 trillion in cash that's in their balance sheets that's parked offshore. Why is that? Because of regulation and high marginal tax rates in the United States. If we can address that issue and get that $1 trillion of investment back into the United States, that would be a fantastic way to kickstart manufacturing, create work, and get people back to work.
And do you also think there's an image issue that people, we're using welding as the example,
sure,
that they're not going into that because they either don't think there's money in it or they don't think it's a prestigious job to tell people they're a welder, when in fact they probably could make a really good living and have a very happy life?
Sure. You know, every time you Hollywood or television, they always show the guy who works in manufacturing in some seedy shop and he's the criminal. Well, you know, that's so disrespectful to
True.
People who work in those careers and unfair, and that doesn't help.
Okay, and my last question, I can't speak for Vincent there. Are there some great success stories of U.S. manufacturers that really stand out, people or companies that we should be looking at as, you know, they're doing it right?
You know, it's so hard to name. DeWeiss Manufacturing in Grand Rapids is the name that comes to mind. You know, he's a job shop. He's a metal fabricator. He's a gentleman who's committed to building products, making quality products in the United States. That's one that comes to mind. Iowa Laser is another company that comes to mind. Those are just a few. And
okay.
You know, and selfishly, if I may, there's a company in Chicago that's celebrated its 125th anniversary this year, and they manufacture popcorn machines for the theater industry that go around the world. 125 years.
What a niche that you wouldn't even stop to think about, probably.
And, you know, I'm fortunate it's my wife's family business, but, you know, so I can see it up close, but the
you
odds
have to
of
say
surviving.
That. I shut my mouth.
The odds of surviving for 125
right.
years as a manufacturing company in the United States are incredibly high, and it's a testament to the people who work there
Well, and they've obviously figured out how to continue to be successful, profitable, competitive, all of those things.
Correct. And, you know, and it's harder and harder every day. They'd like a little help.
Right.
And a brilliant engineer runs the company.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Crazy. He is a brilliant engineer. I've got the opportunity to meet him.
Yeah. Well, Ed, thank you so much for taking time to be with us this evening and shed a little light on manufacturing. Because here in Bridgeport, manufacturing used to be the total mainstay, and we've lost a lot of the companies. And so I think there's still, you know, a warm, fuzzy feeling when you talk about manufacturing in our area, as well as some sadness because it's sort of what made the city thrive, and now it's gone.
Sure. Well, you know, the Bridgeport Machine Tool Company made fabulous products. I know of one that's sitting in C. Creeders and Company in Chicago, Illinois, still running today in the machine shop. So those people should be very proud of the technology that they made and how well it's lasted.
Absolutely. All right, Ed, we're going to take a quick break.
You can stay on and listen to Burke if you'd like.
It'd be my pleasure.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk.